cutting off, the elevator keeps breaking down, and the landlord won't return your calls, but the rent keeps going up and up and up?
Find out what you can do about it. Tune in to Housing Notebook, Mondays at 8 p.m. Reactionary landlord.
The previous program was Counterspin, heard Mondays after the WBAI Evening News, Mondays at 6:30 p.m. Stay tuned for Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
And now, Dying for a Living. Workers stand up and fight for their rights.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights.
My name is Antonia Washington. Everyone calls me Nia. My oldest brother was Lawrence Daquan Davis. Everyone called him Day. He was killed at his very first job on the very first day as a temporary worker.
His first day at work was his last.
The accident happened here at the Bacardi plant on Jacksonville's north side.
For many, it's come down to finding any work to get by.
As a result, more people are turning to local temp agencies.
Businesses have been hiring more temporary workers than any other kind.
Many people think about temporary work simply is not a reality.
I remember when a temp worker was a temp worker. That's dramatically changed. Now, sometimes as much as 90% of workforces are temp workers.
The term temp work has nothing to do with the length of these work assignments. It speaks to the nature of the employment relationship.
Every industry gets safer every year, and it's going in the complete opposite direction for temp workers.
It's easy to quantify the number of workers being killed because that's reported. What doesn't always get reported is who they worked for.
It's the best kept secret in the temp industry.
Day had studied to be a medical assistant.
He was the father figure. He was always there.
Temporary blue-collar workers in Florida were 6 times more likely to be injured. And you can see right here, he goes underneath the machine.
He didn't know what was going on, and you can tell because he looked confused just running across the thing.
They have to hit the ground running. It's not a training situation.
OSHA found nearly a dozen violations.
15
and these
violations, 13 of them labeled as serious.
But even then, now we have this evidence of what they do. What do we do now?
One person is still unaccounted for after yesterday's massive explosion.
A 41-year-old man fell into a working meat blender.
Overcome by some sort of chemical.
The company relied on
temporary worker who started here a few weeks ago.
Crushed by an industrial mixer working on a temporary basis.
You don't work here no more. You don't work here no more. You don't work here no more. So
government. Talked about that. That is something that we can influence in the United States at every state level.
The temp industry has remained a very strong political lobby. They've become deeply entrenched in our way of doing business. Outsourcing the issue of safety to some outside agency clearly makes no sense.
It doesn't add up. The story doesn't add up, period, to me.
Antonia Washington describes the landmark workplace death of her 21-year-old brother, Lawrence Daquan Day Davis, an employee of a temporary staffing agency working at the Bacardi bottling plant in Jacksonville, Florida. He was killed 90 minutes into the first day of the job, the first job of his life.
Antonia exposes that the temporary staffing industry makes workplaces more dangerous, is used to hide the safety records of some of the biggest employers in the country, and makes the American dreams harder to reach for millions of working people. With thousands killed in preventable workplace accidents every year in the United States, Antonia and workers you're about to hear from remind us of the cost of just one individual. 90 minutes before the 21-year-old Dade Davis was killed on his first day of work as a temporary employee, he texted a picture of himself to his girlfriend, excited for their future.
Now Antonia rejoins us, and she and fellow workers tell their stories and search for answers as they get up and stand up for their rights. Representative of the approximately 16 million temporary and contract staffing employees deprived of equal pay for equal day work, without benefits and health and safety protections, essentially at the mercy of the $100 billion temporary staffing industry, who is putting millions of American workers at risk. Now, dying for a living. Workers, get up and stand up for their rights. Antonia Washington.
It's something serious to actually see yourself from a couple of years ago. But revisiting, like, the situation and the feelings, they're still the same. Because it's not often that I actually watch the film, because, like I said, it's just a lot of things that hasn't been handled. It's still a lot of growth coming from just all the movement and everything that we're doing. But I do want to thank everybody for just showing up and having me to be a part of this opportunity to hopefully, you know, just make a change for the future. We were born 5 years and one day apart. Trying to deal with the fact that he's not here is the hardest thing. And then it being coming from what could have been prevented, honestly, a workplace incident, it makes it harder to accept the fact that he's gone. They was a very driven individual. He was just, like, excited for this job, too, because he was soon to be actually giving birth to his baby. He was excited to be a part of the job, to actually start, and not even, you know, a complete 4 hours into his shift, his life was taken from him. Honestly, we actually didn't even find out until hours after day had passed. It wasn't until we were actually about to go and pick him up from what we thought was a completed shift of work did my mother open the door to a sheriff to actually say that he was no longer with us. That was one of those things that was actually hard for me to accept, and so I didn't really go through my emotional bit. I was in shock, so I wasn't working at the time, so I didn't even understand how, you know, somebody's life could be taken at work. It didn't make any sense to me, so it took a lot for me to actually accept it. And it probably wasn't really until after his funeral that I actually really take everything in. But years go by, and we put the film together. And even then, you know, it was still hard. It was serious. Having to play that role to actually tell his story, it was difficult. He didn't actually get to go into the workforce and actually experience it, because he didn't make it past his birthday. And I just knew from that point, you know, me coming into the workforce, I told myself, you know, I would find whatever job that I could potentially find without being, you know, putting myself in any harm's way. So I was trying to actually prevent myself from maybe having to go into a warehouse job or anything like that. But we all know that times get hard. And a lot of the times it's only those warehouse jobs and those temporary agencies which are employing us for those jobs, you know, readily available. You actually need them. So, of course, it was actually not too long after we made the documentary that I actually go into working for Remedy Staffing Intelligence, which was the same temporary agency that Dave was employed under. For actually accepting the job and everything, it took a lot for me to actually be okay with even, you know, being a part of that company and everything, because it just, it didn't feel right, but it just felt like it was like just my only option. It was hard, and I bounced around from warehouse to warehouse for a little while until, you know, they finally put me in a place where it was called Coach Warehouse. You know, they just make apparel and bags and stuff and ship them out. And it's actually, I think, the largest distribution plant for Coach is here actually in Jacksonville. I probably worked at Coach itself for maybe like 3 years. But as far as Remedy Staffing together, it was 5 in total. And I was just working, you know, at the time I was young, so I didn't really pay at first much attention to the fact that what I was lacking from the company that employed me, I wasn't getting, you know, any benefits. I had no pay time off, no sick time off. If I was to be late, or if, you know, I was to be sick and couldn't come in, I would actually have to suffer the consequences of points and things that would potentially, if they were to get to a certain statute, I would lose my job. It was, I won't say a burden, but in a sense it was, because I had no freedom, no time. I couldn't take the time if I needed the time. It just, it wasn't there. I still stuck with it. I worked with Coach, like I said, for the 3 years, waiting to become a permanent worker, hoping that I was going to then get my benefits, maybe, you know, a raise. It was actually at the end of 2019, going into 2020, where I had got offered to go on to permanent. And at the time, I was already making $12.65. So I'm excited. I'm thinking, yeah, after they done let everyone go from the temporary agency, you know, they brought all these machines in and stuff. And because I actually learned how to work the machine, I guess, showed them that I was a value asset. And at that point, that's when I was extended the offer. But it was the day that I opened the offer letter to accept the job, and my raise was 15 cents. It was only 15 cents. So at that point, I went through this emotional roller coaster, because I had been given so many years to this company, and my brother had, you know, my brother lost his life to this company. That 15 cent made me feel invaluable. It didn't make me feel like I was worth anything. So that day I decided, you know, I'm going to let this company go. I would not work for Remedy Staffing anymore. I was not going to work for Coach. I wasn't going to do it. And I'm sorry to get emotional, but it just to revisit even that situation definitely puts a toll on me, because, like I said, you know, I watched my mother also work for this company. My younger brother, who is going to be 20 this year, he also worked for this company. So it just sucks, because they don't really care. And that's how, honestly, just being a worker, that's how it feels. It feels like they don't care. There's not a lot of policies and procedures, you know, intact behind these companies to ensure that we are safe. I actually, working for a Coach, we have these push carts that have ladders on them. Climbing up the ladder, I actually, you know, I fell, and it was at least 4 steps, and I'm not quite that tall, but we were reaching into boxes that were maybe 2 feet tall, walking up these ladders, and when I fell, instead of taking care of me and trying to make sure I was okay, they just had me sit down for 2 hours and rest myself, because I was a temporary worker. No matter what, even if I just decided I couldn't work after those 2 hours, I was going to have to suffer the consequences of getting points put on behind my name. And then, of course, which would eventually lead to, if I was to acquire too many, me losing my job. So I literally sat out for 2 hours and got up and had to limp around, and nobody showed no remorse, you know, for me. I still had to meet my productivity time and everything. So I'm happy to be a part of this this environment, because we see the bigger picture, and it is that we need more, especially in this field as workers. I'm also a part of the National Tip Worker Council, Temp Worker Justice, and just like we continuously try to involve ourselves in the issues and from place to place so that we can make sure something does happen. And change is made, and there are laws, policies, and procedures put intact, as well as fair compensation. Being in these workplaces, I've witnessed not only other people, you know, go through traumas and all types of things, as far as like maybe losing someone to a work-related incident, or even just not being able to work due to a work-related accident and not getting any compensation for that. And I just feel like that's totally unfair. You know, 5,000 workers are killed on a job year round. That's yearly. That's a yearly estimated number. So it's that's terrible. Like we should not be dying to make a living. We don't live for money. We don't live for, you know, for things of the such. So it's just amazing that, you know, this things like this are going on so that we can make the world aware that there are things that need to be changed for people like us, people who are involving ourselves in these different jobs that don't see the benefits of having people like us, people who will come in off the streets with bare minimum of training. When I was employed with Coach, I went through a 30 minute training. That was it. They told me about my PPE and everything, you know, but they didn't go as far as to tell me about the safety being on the floor, though, about things that break down. Coach's roof leaked all the time, so it would be buckets all over the floor. We'd have to watch out for the buckets while we're trying to pick and pack around machines. And honestly, it wasn't until I really put myself in the environment did I understand the extent of what happened to my brother. Because now I know that he was neglected. It was neglect. It was neglect there. They could have done more. And I would hate for anybody else to have to deal with those traumas, whether it's losing a brother, a mother, a sister, or anyone, because it never changes. Those feelings stay. And it sucks to have to go and do that same thing, go through the same environment. And no one cares about your safety if you're not considered a permanent worker or, you know, a permanent part of the company. So I'm sorry, but I just don't want what happened to my family, what happened to my brother, to happen to anybody else. These companies and these corporations should be held accountable, and it should be us that should hold them accountable. We should be able to tell them what we need, and we should be able to get it as temporary workers, just as they would do for those who actually work permanently through their company. I will continue to push until a change is made. When my brother passed, yeah, we heard about it on the news, you know, we did the film, and nothing changed. Nothing changed. And Bacardi they put a memorial actually out on the plant for my brother. We can't hardly visit it. I remember for the first year, we had to schedule to even just be able to go out there. And when we did, we were always turned around. That just shows me there even more. They still don't care after even going through the whole process of everything. So it just, I will stick to being a part of this, and I will stick behind everybody until change is made, because no one else should, like I said, no one else should have to suffer the consequences behind these companies not caring about their workers, whether they're permanent or temporary. I feel like we all come in and we do the same work. We deserve the same care. We deserve the same compensation. It should not make no difference. And to even be temporary for as long as I was, it wasn't until it was brought to my attention when I started telling people, I'm like, yeah, I was temp for 5 years. They're like, you were temp for 5 years? Like, what? And it's crazy because when you sign your contract, it actually tells you, for most companies, I'm not sure everywhere else, but here, after 90 days, you should be considered, if you put in the work, you should be considered a permanent worker. I should be getting offered the same amount of pay as the person I'm working next to. So it's mind-boggling to me, and I continue to learn new things just being a part of, you know, these different, you know, corporations that are trying to actually, you know, make change for everyone. When I hear other stories of people telling me, you know, even if they're just witness to someone else being treated incorrectly at their workplace. So I will continue to push for for more. I mean, until we are all being completely compensated for the work that we do, you will see my face. I will continue to speak. I will continue to be here. Hopefully just, if I can be some impact on lives, I would love to do that. I really would.
Following the blood, sweat, and tears that was the story of Antonia Washington, let's listen to Netta Carter tell her powerful story.
As a young mother, you know, coming up, you know, I watched my mother, you know, go through many struggles, you know, trying to raise us as a single mom. And she did a great job of doing it. So happened I end up, you know, having my own kids. In order to provide for my children, after I graduated from school, started seeking employment because I had my own place. And my first job was at Shoney's Restaurant. Now, Shoney's is a racist place to work at. But this particular day, they had us, it was during a rush hour. I was hired to do the salad bar, just to keep up the salad bar, to keep it clean, keep it looking presentable. So happened when the manager told me to go back there and cut up some lettuce, which I wasn't trained for the lettuce. I wasn't no more than probably about 20 or 21, somewhere up in there, as a young worker. And so I went back there to cut the lettuce, and so happened one of the blades, the lettuce cutter had a lot of blades on it. So as I was slicing the lettuce, I almost sliced my thumb, my finger off. And the only thing he told me to do was wrap up my finger and go back to work. Well, me not knowing any better, you know, as a young mother, first job, trying to keep employment to make ends meet, I stayed on. And I didn't have any idea about legal service or what precautions to take or what strategies to take in order to, you know, get treatment. So I just stayed on with the company. But now I stand as an outreach organizer for the Mississippi Workers Center for workers that are injured, the temp workers being hurt on the job. I stand for those that's for justice and for rights of not being harassed on their jobs. On another job, I was sexual harassed. White employees just talking down to you. This man even called me a helper as I passed by the salad bar with a hot pan of soup. I started to throw it on him, but he said, you're such a fine helper. And I looked at that man, I said, look, I said, don't address me as a helper. I said, my name is Netta Carter. And from now on, that's how you address me. I said, I'm gonna address you as Jack. You address me as Netta Carter. Because I literally started to throw that soup on him. But I know I would have went to jail. But anyway, now I know the precautions to take. And there's so many people out there going through the same stuff, you know, trying to make ends meet, you know, at McDonald's and places like that, working hard to try to take care of their family. And they have to take all this crap off of people are being retaliated. My thing was I decided to do better working in fast food restaurants like Captain D's and places like that. I decided to do better, go back to school, and try to make something of myself because I refuse to get paid low wages, with all that you have to put up with. People hollering at you and screaming at you, just trying to treat you any kind of way because of the skin of your color. So this is what I decided to do, to go back, make a difference. And now I'm making that difference. Even in my community, I'm making a difference with the workers so performing, organizing people to get together to talk about their stories and struggles on their jobs. We even went to city officials, you know, we did a demand letter in the community talking about infrastructures of the neighborhood. So, and then about mandatory mask wearing for people to wear masks. So we got that done. That's my story as telling about being an organizer.
From community worker builder Netta Carter, we're joined by Gerald Sanders, actually joining us from his workplace.
Well, my experience, it was a little rocky. Started out, let's see, I was like 18. I had just graduated. I was working at Camden, and Camden really wasn't making me enough money at the time. So I went to a temp agency to get me a job. So I started at Monroe. I started working here back in 2017. And I was a temp worker for 2 years, making $8 an hour. Like, it was real rough. I had one child at that time, and I was making about $8 an hour. And everybody else around me was making more and like 6 months had passed, and I would have been begging for a raise in my 90 days was up. My 3 months was up, and I had been begging for a raise, but I could never get now. Then 6 months came, and they gave me a raise, and it was 50 cents. So, you know, I thought I was doing something at the time. I've been here 6 months, I got a 50 cent raise, but to come find out, everybody else got a dollar that day. I got 50 cents, because I was still a temp worker. Time go past, the year passed by. I'm asking everybody, you know, how can I get hired in? Like what do I gotta do? Do I gotta work harder? Like if I'm too young, you know, I don't wanna offend nobody, but like is it the color of my skin? Like what is it? The boss man just used to tell me like just work harder, you know, we working at it, but right now we're not looking for nobody. So, you know, time passed by. It's been 2 years now, so I went to the front office with it, and I was like, either I get hired on, or either today is going to be my last day. So at that time, they found out that I was a good worker. I've been loyal to them for 2 years, walking off their job, knowing I'm a temp worker, not getting paid number $8.50. They finally came in, and they gave me $10. They gave me a $10 raise. They gave me $10, and they hired me on. So, you know, that was a blessing at the time. I've been waiting 2 years. At them 2 years, after all that, I've been here for 2 more years since then. I got 2 more kids. You know, times got harder, but at the time kept going, you know, money kept flowing, but now it's like, is it a standstill? I'm not a temp worker no more. Being in a work environment as a hired man is still hard on black men, because they really don't want to pay us. It's just rough. Like, I've been here 4 years now, and I went from $8 to $13. But like when I got hired on, I jumped from 10 to 13, like within 6 months. So I was like, why couldn't you do that when I was a temp worker? And I was still working the same. But as time flow, you know, you just have to adjust to your environment. To me, it was like, know your worth. Like if you don't know your worth, they'll use you till they can use and get rid of you. So the day I demanded that I either get hired on or I walk out was the day they seen that I finally know my own work. And from there, I just been putting in work. Hopefully I'm looking for a raise soon, but it ain't came yet. So I might have to demand again. But other than that, I just tell everybody, just know your worth. Like, you know what I'm saying? Being a temp worker, it don't mean that like you can't get hired on, but at the same time they will use you to their full advantage. Like they will use you till they can't use you anymore. I promise. I have witnessed it. I have seen a dude work out here with me. He worked out here. He was here before me, and he's still not hired on. He finally quit this year, and he was out here like 4 or 5 years. As a temp worker. So I know how it is to be a temp worker. I was a temp worker for a long time, 2 years, and it's just rough. Like, you just gotta know your worth in life. Like, cause after a while, the Lord will let you see, like, if the job for you or not. To me, I kept praying about it, and he told me to go to them with what I wanted them to hear. And I went to them with, either hire me on or I'm walking out today. And they hired me on. So it just really just know your worth.
Cindy Taylor joins us to illuminate the way greed predominates and how workers' lives are devalued. And we'll read a poem written just for this summit, Caution Danger.
I will be speaking on the behalf of 5 individuals that lost their life. The first story that I want to tell you guys is about a lady, Ella Gladney. She works at FedEx. She was a team leader. And this story hits home more because my brother was actually a part of that team, the 3-man team. Her job on that 3-man team was to maneuver a cargo loader place into the aircraft. The E stop control, which is the emergency stop control, was up under the loader where no one could see her. So when she went up there, up under to stop it, it actually slit her body in half. And she died instantly at work at FedEx on the ground. And my brother had to witness this. The things that my brother had to go through, the mental change, my brother, and the very next day was Thanksgiving. I'm sorry. And my brother couldn't come out the room. He didn't want to eat. He didn't talk about it. And even though it was about 6 or 7 months later, my brother didn't receive any counseling or any therapy or anything by witnessing this tragic event. To see the change in my brother hasn't been the same ever since, and I can just imagine I probably wouldn't be the same either. Even though FedEx was calling him in and out to come in to meet with the lawyers or come in to meet with OSHA, they never called him to meet with any counseling or anything of that nature. And to add salt to that injury, FedEx was only fined $7,000 for that tragic incident. And then I move over to the next incident. A year later, at FedEx again, a young man named Dante Young, 23 years old, he died only working there for 1 month. 1 month through a temporary service, and they only gave him about 30 minutes training, and they put him straight to work. The sad part is he died on his son's birthday, and his son was turning 6 years old while he's at work trying to provide for his family. He lost his life. He was working and his leg got caught in one of the containers. It drug his body, and of course it knocked him unconscious. And when the emergency team came, they performed CPR, and he never gained conscious again. I want to talk about one more story. I want to go down south to New Orleans, Louisiana. I don't know if you guys remember where you were or what you was doing in 2019 of October, but I do. That's the day that construction site of the Hard Rock Cafe on the Canal Street, it collapsed. And out of the 280 people inside, three souls lost their life. The three souls is Anthony Margaret, Jose Ariello, and Quentin Wimberly. The sad part is that out of those 12 dozen was injured. And those were workers and also pedestrians. Just days prior to this tragic event, you had a guy named Delmar Palmer. He posted on his website, and on his social media, him and several other workers, the concern about the unsafe work environment. They also showed the safety beams that was holding each floor separate. They were bending and getting ready to collapse then. The safety officials were there, the foremen were there, supervisors were there, and they still had the men go into their building. To add salt to the injury, two of the three bodies stayed in that building for 300 plus days. That collapsed construction site became a tomb for those souls. After investigation, they found out that inspectors was getting paid under the table. Permits was given out that shouldn't have been given out. That whole Safety and Health Administration team was in pure violation, and not to this day, no one has been legally responsible for the lives that was lost that day. And the whistleblower, the very 3 days after the incident, after he talked to the media, they deported him back to Honduras, all because he reported something that should have been reported. He had been in the States for about 15 years with his family. And just like that, because he opened up his mouth, they shipped him off. He hasn't even been able to talk to his family. These souls lost their lives. All of this could have been prevented if someone would have just done their job that day. The greed, getting paid under the table, things of that nature is just unacceptable. And the mayor did dismember the Safety and Health Administrative team, which was a good thing, but no legal action has been brought. It's something legal that has to be done. Now, I want to close with this. I understand sometimes people get scared about telling it because of retaliation and things of that nature. But you have to understand, you must speak up. you might save a life, and that life might just be yours. I'm going to read this poem, Caution Danger, by the great Jerry Blue Hill. Caution Danger. They knew their machine was faulty and that it would break down pretty soon. They didn't worry about it. They didn't even care. The only one in danger was you. Caution Danger. Employees only. Caution Danger. Employees only. The chemicals you working with, that labor won't tell you what's inside. You ask your supervisor, and he act like he got something to hide. Say you just want to start trouble, he act like you don't have any rights. Caution Danger. Employees only. Caution Danger. Employees only. Look at the lives lost while they worry about the cost. Look at the lives lost while they worry about their cost. Caution Danger. Employees only. Thank you.
We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and family. More than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families.
I wanted more. Pay, but what I've got here today is more than I bargained for. When I walk through that door, I bring home asbestosis and silicosis for long black lung disease. And the radiation hits the children before they've really been conceived. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and family. More than a paycheck to our loved ones and family.
Tyson Foods says get back, but poultry workers are saying hell no and fighting back. Let's hear from Magali Lakali, the executive director of Veteremos, a worker-based organization in Springdale, Arkansas, whose mission is to ensure the human rights of poultry workers.
It's always a pleasure to share what we are doing in Arkansas. Venceremos is an organization that is worker-led organization by workers with from Tyson and George's plant. So we launched Venceremos in October 2019, but we actually been organizing for over 6 years. Poultry workers have been traveling since 2014-16 to advocate to decrease the line speed. So whenever the pandemic began, we were organizing around the amount of chemicals used at the poultry plants. Right now there is nothing like to control the levels of chemicals used at the poultry plants, which has led long-term, lifelong injuries in the respiratory, in the lungs. So whenever we saw that COVID-19 or that the meatpacking plants were the hotspot of COVID-19, we began to worry because most of the workers are vulnerable to COVID-19 because of the pre-existing working conditions that have led to many of these workers injured for life. Many of the workers that form Venceremos have respiratory problems, and none of them have basic leave, and actually they get punished for missing work while sick. So poultry workers are used to work to work while sick. So all of these pre-existing conditions were alarming. But actually a year ago, we began organizing poultry workers because OSHA was absent completely in protecting workers. So the government was not acting to protect workers. The companies were acting against the workers. So we didn't have any other option but to organize. So what we did was to organize poultry workers to sign a worker petition. A year ago, we delivered that petition with over 300 signatures from companies, from these different companies, Tyson's, Georgie's, And really what the workers were demanding was adequate PPE, that the company allowed them to practice social distancing, basic leave, a hazard pay, the right to quarantine. And so these companies, whenever we did these actions a year ago, were not providing even masks. And we know that the outbreaks were beginning in many other plants across the country back in March of 2020. So whenever we began mobilizing workers in April 2020, companies were not really talking about COVID. The only thing that they did was to check the temperature. But we knew that many of people with COVID were asymptomatic. So they were not doing contact tracing. Workers were coming in and didn't know if how many cases were, if they were exposed. So it was a very, very crucial year for poultry workers because they pretty much felt like they were called essential. However, they were being treated as expendable. And as the worker told me, they said that we are essential, but we believe that pretty much we are essential machines, that we have to remain in the jobs, doing the jobs with the excuse of we have to feed the country. And that was really what the excuse was for these companies, that they refused to shut down. We were organizing care events, rallies, letters to the governor to demand the shutdowns of these poultry plants with outbreaks. And really what the companies did was to lobby the government so that the government give them protections. The federal government under the Trump administration gave this order that will protect companies from any liability related to COVID-19. And also these companies use this as a way to say the government is telling us that we cannot shut down the plants. And that was basically a lie, because they had this narrative that these workers had to feed the whole nation. But really what we learned after months is that in the month of April, the meat packing companies were exporting tons of meat to China. So really these companies were not forcing these workers to keep working to feed the country. They were feeding the world for profits. It was about profits. It was not about a crisis in need. It was not about that. It was about the profits of these companies. And really what we learned this year is that Tyson Company did over $11 million more of profit than any other year. So workers with the outbreaks were sick, were hospitalized, were not granted basic leave. Many of them have very difficult time to get short-term disabilities. The workers were forced to come back to work if they didn't have any symptoms, risking other workers to get sick. So it was not just only the COVID situation. It was that the companies were forcing workers to work faster. Some companies got waivers to increase the line speed to 174 birds per minute. And so they did everything under cover. We didn't know until everything was just approved. And also I want to say that there is not inspectors. So there is very few inspectors. After Trump was elected, they decreased the inspectors. They increased the line speed. And so really there is nothing, mechanisms to check, to monitor the violations that these companies are doing. So all the workers in all the plants in Arkansas were saying that they were working faster, that the line speed had increased. So they were working with less people and being forced to work the double to keep up the production. So that what was happening with these workers, who felt so lonely. So really the government did nothing to protect these workers. And so we had just to do direct actions. Right now, the company are not talking whatsoever about COVID-19, although some workers have access to vaccines. There is a lot of outreach, education, the equity that it doesn't go to all the communities. The access to vaccination is now getting to very rural communities, so workers don't have really much access, or really access to missed work, because as I mentioned to you, workers get punished for missing work, and if they get up to 13 points, they will be fired. So they are all the time fearing about losing their jobs. So right now, there is a lot of issue on health and safety. Workers are working faster, and therefore there's more cuts, more amputations, more falls, and things like that. So right now, there also workers are complaining about the lack of bathroom breaks.
From Greenville, Mississippi, Rebecca Miles, a service worker who took on City Hall and forced an area-wide masking mandate, joins us to talk about not dying for a living.
What I was not going to do, and I was not going to die to make a living. You know, I was addicted to CNN, so I heard a whole lot of stuff. No, numbers just didn't fit well with me. And me, I'm 56, gonna be 57. You gotta remember, I got married at like 45, and I had two children, so I had two young kids. So I can't afford to die right now. Lord, you know, me and God made a promise that He's gonna take care of me, and I was gonna put the work in. So I was not gonna sit out here. So when COVID first started, these people are applicants at the municipal golf course here in Greenville, and let me just say this, that I am not rich, but these white folks, stop. Let me tell you, they would not put on a mask. They would not. And so I just say, well, I can't just do this. You know, I had come to work. I was an essential worker. And it looked like they had closed everything down except Walmart and the golf course. So and Lowe's. Everybody was out. And, you know, I had to work like many of us. I had to work. So I just, you know, I came together. And, you know, I would have to sometimes tell them, you know, just get back. You know, you all need a mask on when you come up here. Because I wasn't going to serve them without a mask on. Time went on. It was a struggle at first until I just went. I went and I addressed. I called first. I went to the park commissioner, which is where it's home. Let you know and told him about these people just won't wear a mask. They wouldn't wear. They put signs on the door, face mask required, and still they wouldn't wear. So then I took it on to City Hall. So they had a meeting with the bosses out here. Mass was quiet, and then still some wouldn't wear, and that's fine, but you're not going to come up in here. Then they went as far as to say one time that the governor had lifted the mask ban. Well, the governor may have lifted it, but the city of Greenville hadn't. So you guys are going to have to put on a mask, so you're not going to come to this camp. I learned a lot, and I want to give a shout out to the Workers' Circle because I learned a lot of informative information besides listening and hearing. Shout out to all the speakers today, all the panelists. You all were great. I've learned so much. But this, like I said, what I wasn't going to do, I was not going to die to make a living, not at my workplace. I just was not going to go for that. And whatever I had to do, I don't have any tax training. I don't have tax. Neither have a tax. I don't have tax. So me and Nita together, we just like, Nita get it all wrote up and I'm going to go take it. I'm going to say it. So I just want to give a shout out to the Mississippi Workers' Circle and all the good ladies on the panelists. And I'm glad to be here. I'm at work. I love my job because I used to practice it, and it had took a toll on me. So I've been working here for about 6 years, and I actually love my job. I mean, I do. I like the job. I like, you know, being, but I didn't like they didn't want to adhere to the rules out here for wearing the mask. And I'll tell you something else. They brought in the sanitation teams to breathe these. To clean up after I went to the front, they bring them in every month and sanitize the whole place. So it's a little bit better, and a lot of them have taken their shots. I've had mine, and my shoulder's hurting a little bit, but I just want to stay above the ground to take care of my kids and big families.
Stacy Alvarado, a young mother and a temp worker, raises her voice about making ends meet and how she and we need more.
I was working at McDonald's 6 months pregnant. I got fired because I was having some real bad contractions. I ain't just been one, you know, I was hurting real bad. They wanted me to finish my shift. I was working from 10 midnight till 6 in the morning. A lot of people there was not wearing masks like they were supposed to. I know I was. I did get fired because I told them I needed to be off because I was having a lot of pain and I felt like I was in born labor. I ended up getting fired because I was having Also because they wanted me to do the little COVID test, and I didn't want to do it because I was already going to have to do it when I went in labor. And then that's when I started at PSF Web, and that's when really the COVID care really started. They was not 6 feet apart. They did take your temperature at the door when you walk in, but they had nobody was 6 feet apart. The stations was not 6 feet apart how they were supposed to, because on the thing, it does say stay 6 feet apart, but they did not got people 6 feet apart. You can come in there with a mask, but a lot of people don't wear masks when talking to other people. They're very rude. I also got fired from there was because I didn't have a babysitter. I was feeling like I couldn't come in because I didn't have a babysitter. They don't work with you on a lot of stuff. And when you need a mask, they don't got those. They don't have sanitizer everywhere like they supposed to. They don't work with you on a lot of stuff. Like if you're feeling sick or something, they want you to be there and finish your day. You're not allowed to leave early. If not, you'll be terminated for leaving early on your shifts. They're supposed to let you go because of the COVID. If you're feeling sick, they don't know what you're feeling sick about. They won't let you do that. Going to a job and there are people feeling sick, and then you got to come home to your child, and you don't know if you got the COVID and you come home to your child. That's the reason I stopped working at PSF Web the first time. The second time was because I didn't have a babysitter. They weren't working with me like how they were supposed to. It was a lot of people getting sick in there. And I have a 5-month-old, so I didn't want to get my son catch COVID because they didn't want to let the people that wanted feel sick to go home. My son is very important to me, so people are feeling sick, you should let them go home and go get that checked out for you to come home to your child, make sure you don't get sick, make sure you don't catch COVID. PSF Web don't do that. You're not 6 feet apart like you're supposed to. They got people standing next to each other, not telling them to, like, 6 feet apart. It's a lot of stuff PSF Web need to learn about the COVID. They need to take it serious, but they don't.
Ricky Thompson, a People's Choice candidate for and now member of the Mississippi House of Representatives and a healthcare worker in the private sector, raises his voice now.
As they say, the struggle is real, and dying to make a living is very much real. First of all, like I said, I am a survivor. I am an essential worker. As we look at this being a survivor and essential worker, you know, it brings back to me the struggle that I went through as when I'm working for a long-term care facility. As you all know, being a nurse and being on the front line working with COVID, and I was on the front line working with other workers, and I work at a long-term care facility, which is in North Mississippi, and is owned by one of the largest hospital facilities in North Mississippi. And as we all understand, when you are kind of the big one on the block, you don't think you have to follow the rules. So as being a healthcare worker, and the thing that really bothers me about the whole thing starting from the state house when we close down and you have to go back and do your work that you normally do for a living, that it's very important that you take care of people that don't have an opportunity and you have that compassion that you need. So falling back on that, when the COVID first started, I worked in this long-term care facility and I did contract COVID-19, and it was as they say, it was a real struggle for me because being off work and taking care of the individuals. But however, when you're on the inside, you understand what's going on. We did have this issue of just dealing with not having the PPEs that you really need, and an organization of that magnitude not issuing PPEs to workers and everything. And the thing that really stuck out of my mind, you know, you have to be on the inside to see what's going on. And I had the opportunity to be on the inside to see what's going on and working with the healthcare workers and providers and working with mostly young Black females that have to provide for their families, as we see how women really take care of their families and they go the hard, long way to make sure that their families are taken care of. We did have one worker, and along with myself, we said, what is the problem? You're not giving us the proper PPEs, wearing the same things, and telling the workers get online to make sure they had a voice. So we was successful in doing that, but when COVID really hit, it was something that took a toll on a lot of workers as healthcare workers contracting COVID. Just give myself as a personal thing. When you can't breathe and struggle is real and you're not getting enough oxygen and working with your lungs and it's scarred and stuff like that, it's something that you have to deal with for the rest of your life. But being as an essential worker and having someone in place to be a voice, and you know, when you work on the inside, there are workers that are just afraid to speak out because they are concerned about their job and everything. And that's so important that you have an individual that we got on the line and we talked to the people that made sure that we have the proper PPEs, because at one time you had to share a face shield, which was just, I said, this is something that shouldn't be in a facility like this with the amount of money that you have coming in. So we was able to get PPEs for everybody, get masks changed daily, because when we first started, they just give you one mask, you have to wear it for the whole week. And I was just like, what is this? I said, being a legislator and inside, I said, we have to call and complain. So we did do that, and we was able to get things together to make sure that the workers there were being taken care of. So that's very important. And the big part about it, when I say the struggle real, is when you have the proper PPEs, that means you want to go home. And like I said, dying to make a living is something that we really have to take to heart, because it really happens every day for people who do not speak up for themselves. Being on the front line, and we have to be a voice, because in North Mississippi, being of the minority, you have to speak out against the powers that be, because sometimes they will come against you. Our concerned citizens, we stand on the front line. We understand that we will be ostracized, but we just don't care. We have to do what we have to do to make sure that our people are taken care of, the ones that are fighting for their rights just to survive day by day. And that's something that we take to heart. So as you say, being a survivor of COVID, I understand what it really means to dying to make a living, because when you go to an environment and you don't have the proper equipment, and the thing is that you take it home to your family. And the thing that really stuck out in my mind when I became positive with COVID, my wife was also positive for COVID. So, you know, I brought it home to her, and, you know, we have two people that's in the house that's positive. The thing is, when you're dealing with a family member and they become positive, you bring something home to them. That brings the thing to home that you don't want to happen. So the thing is, what I'm telling you is that when you become essential worker, make sure that you have someone that you can talk to make sure your rights are there, and someone that you can reach out to. And as the concerned citizen for justice, we are part of the organization that makes sure that we reach out and we make contact with people that can make a difference. When COVID first came out, this lady was fired just because her husband died of COVID. And that case is still ongoing. And that's her husband died, and she was fired because her husband was positive for COVID. So that's something that we're still working on now. We still have other issues that this COVID is not going away. We had someone called probably about last week dealing with the same thing, fired because of COVID. So being essential workers and being on the front line, the people, the powers that be, are not going to always make sure that your livelihood is taken care of. So it's always about dying to make a living.
Building Bridges has given voice to we, the workers, in Dying for a Living, a health and safety summit which brought together injured, temporary, and other marginalized workers to share their stories towards developing strategies for improving workplace conditions and protecting workers from preventable occupational hazards. This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Stay strong, stay well, and educate, agitate, and organize for the empowerment of we the people, for another world is possible.
Extinction Rebellion Radio is on WBAI every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., hosted by Matthew Kearney and Amy Slank.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
This week on Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI, we have Stephen Donziger, one of the United States political prisoners. In fact, he's effectively Chevron's political prisoner, Chevron Corporation. Stephen Donziger was one of the attorneys who won a landmark case against Chevron for their devastating pollution in Ecuador. It was an $18 billion settlement. And as payback, and in part of their efforts to avoid paying the money, Chevron has hounded Donziger for years. They have used international tribunals and the U.S. federal court system to prosecute him and to confine him. He joins us from his apartment, where he is under house arrest wearing an ankle bracelet, and does his interview after about almost 2 years of house arrest. Extinction Rebellion Radio with Stephen Donziger, Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. on WBAI.
Election Day 2020 is just about behind us, but however long it takes us to learn the results and whoever wins, there are going to be huge questions about what it all means for New York City. Meanwhile, the 2021 city races for mayor